The Irish Times Business Podcast in association with Irish Life.
8 of the top 10 Irish companies choose to do business with us. We know Irish Life. We are Irish Life.
Hello and welcome to the Irish Times Business Podcast. It's Wednesday, June 8th. I'm Ciarán Hancock. And on this week's show, we'll be looking at the battle for the Irish rights to major sporting events. Is the game up for RTE? Laura Slattery will join me later to give her verdict. We'll also be weighing up the Irish Fiscal Advisory Council's assessment that the government needs to find an extra €6 billion just to maintain the current level of public services over the next 5 years. What will this mean for Michael Noonan's budget arithmetic this year? Don't forget that you can subscribe to this podcast for free on iTunes, and it's also available on our website, irishtimes.com/business. But first to the sports rights. Coverage of the Olympics, FIFA, World Cup and other major sporting events was once the preserve of our national broadcaster RTE, but no more. The fragmentation in television services has brought more competitors into the market. And joining me in studio now to discuss the implications for our national broadcaster is Laura Slattery, our media expert. Laura, you're very welcome. We might kick off with the Euro 2016 Football Championships, which begin in France this weekend. I'm heading off there myself. Back in the day, RTE won the rights for the whole tournament, but some months ago, it sublicensed 21 matches and a final to TV3. Explain all to us.
Yeah, it's quite an unprecedented situation. RTE won the rights in this country via the European Broadcasting Union, which did the deal with UEFA, you know, so all fully confirmed and wrapped up last summer.
And that's maintaining a trend for many, many years. They've covered the European Championships for many, many years now.
Absolutely. I mean, everybody in this country associates, you know, the success of the Irish football team with the Bill O'Hurley and the other.
Giles Dunphy, Brady and so forth.
Yeah, I mean, it's just been a huge success for RTE. And last November, it emerged that RTE was going to have to balance the books for 2016, which was set to be an incredibly expensive year for the broadcaster, and it is proving so, because of its spending on the 1916 centenary celebrations, which, you know, wasn't insubstantial, as well as the general election. It has the rights to this year's Olympics, and a number of other expenses meant that it was going to have to recoup some cash somehow, because we won't know for some time, but it is probably, could well end up in a deficit for 2016.
Yeah, and I suppose the backdrop to all of this is the fact that advertising income, it continues to be under pressure, even though the Irish economy has recovered.
Yeah, I mean, it's under pressure for a lot of different media organisations, but the broadcasters aren't jumping up and down for sure. You know, a bit like print, they're under pressure from digital sources as well. There's been a bit of caution in the economy at this year. Maybe people had expected it would go a little bit better on advertising. But the real problem is really just the cost of the transmission. You know, these are great events. They bring in massive audiences, but they all goes on the books. So, as I said, last November, it was quite unprecedented. It said it was going to have to look to sublicense it. TV3 were very eager. They said, I think the exact words were, we're happy to relieve RTE of some of this burden.
And of course, they were coming off the back of a successful Rugby World Cup.
They were on a high after the Rugby World Cup, which not only brought in massive audiences for the Ireland games, but also had pretty attractive audiences for, you know, England's games as well. And in fact, in this, you know, this tournament, it has the exclusive rights now as a result of the deal it did to 21 matches.
Plus the final.
Plus the final, which is shared with RTE and, of course, the UK broadcasters as well.
Mm. I mean, so tell us a little bit about the TV3 matches. What have they got?
Yeah.
What kind of bang are they getting for the book?
The first one they have is England's opening game against Russia on Saturday night. Yeah, 8 p.m. Saturday night this weekend. And it's attractive because in the UK, this is one of the games that ITV rather than the BBC has. And it's not, so it won't be on, you know, because of the UTV Ireland situation, it won't be
on. It's not available to Irish subscribers.
It's not available to most, you know. You can tune in ITV via the Sky satellite, but most people don't. And it's not on Virgin Media. So the easiest way, in fact, pretty much the only way that Irish people will watch that England match is on TV3. And that might come as a surprise to some people who weren't, you know, expecting to have to turn on TV3. Some people never turn on TV3.
And there's a huge curiosity value of watching England games, isn't it?
Yeah, absolutely. And it has another England game. It has the England-Slovakia game is one of their games. And it also has three of the round of 16 matches and two of the quarterfinals exclusively in Ireland.
I think they have a Northern Ireland game as well, am I right?
It has. It has the exciting fixture that is Ukraine versus Northern Ireland.
Okay.
That's one of theirs. And yeah. So that's one of the TV3 ones.
All right. Do we have any sense, first of all, how much RTE paid for these rights?
No, because as I said, it went through the European Broadcasting Union. So it's actually very tricky sometimes to get a sense of exactly how much they pay for
or how much
even how much
managed
TV3
to recoup from TV3 or what percentage they managed to recoup.
No, I'm afraid I don't know. But I mean, put it this way, TV3 has 21 matches plus the final. That leaves RTE2 with 29 exclusive matches plus the final. So they've given away quite a lot of the matches. You know, this is not just a handful of matches here.
Yeah.
This is really shared coverage between RTE and
TV3. It must be a tough pill for the RTE sports guys in particular to have to swallow.
Well, I think this is coming ahead, of course, from 2018. It's lost the Six Nations rugby to TV3. And a lot of other things are under pressure as well. And it has particular consequences, I think, for RTE2 as a channel. RTE2 as a channel, audience share bounces around from month to month. April tends to be kind of a bad month for the channel, and it would have been about 5% audience share in the April just gone. It's not great. But say last July, when it had a lot of World Cup action, sorry, that's 2014, it seems like only a year ago, but 2 years ago, it would have had a 15% share. So 5 to 15%, that's what it's capable of jumping as a result of these massive audiences.
That's RTE2. And of course, they've moved the Sunday game live to RTE1, which is an interesting development.
Yeah, it's really interesting what's going to happen to RTE2 in the future when less sport.
We'll talk about the GAA in a moment. But let's talk about the Olympics, because you mentioned that the Olympics are on this year from Rio. RTE have the exclusive rights, so we're all looking forward to it. Hopefully it'll be a good Olympics for Ireland and we win a number of medals. But in the future, there's been a big shift in terms of the TV rights in Europe, in that Discovery, which owns the Eurosport channel, has secured the rights. Am I right in saying for the next two set of summer and winter games after?
Yeah,
after
across most of Europe, Discovery's rights kick in from 2018, which means the first summer games is Tokyo 2020. That's later in the UK and France, where the BBC had already done the deal. But
it has agreed to sub-license to some national
broadcasters.
Yeah,
that was a condition of the deal that it did with the International Olympic Committee, which, you know, wants its games to be watched. So obviously free-to-air channels are the way to do that. So it was a condition of that and also the local free-to-air broadcasting regulations in various countries, including Ireland, that a certain number of hours would be on terrestrial or free-to-air channels. So RTE's deal was just announced in Paris there last week. So I suspect that most viewers won't notice any difference, because, you know, even this year, RTE is sub-licensing from somebody. The difference is that they're sub-licensing from an agency that it doesn't have a broadcast platform. Whereas in Tokyo 2020, Discovery is going to want to keep certain, you know, bells and whistles for Eurosport and to really, you know, create a buzz around Eurosport. And, you know, whether it's just like on-demand action via Eurosport Player or just some, you know, particular types of coverage, they want to increase their viewership, get more advertising in, and, you know, make Eurosport, I mean, one quote is that make it the ESPN of Europe, because traditionally it's been a bit more second tier, and the Olympics is the biggest thing that it's gone after so far.
Yeah, right. I suppose what Irish people are concerned about is, are they going to be able to watch Irish boxers fighting in a final or a semi-final? Are they going to be able to watch that on RTE, or will they have to watch it on Eurosport? Or you know, maybe if some of our athletes are competing in a final event in the athletics competitions, are they going to be able to watch that on RTE, or are they going to have to watch it on Eurosport?
I suspect the biggest moments will still be, including the biggest moments for us as a nation, will still be available on RTE.
Or the 100 metres final, which mightn't feature any Irish competitors, but
yeah,
it's usually popular.
I imagine like that's the, you know, the blue chip Olympic events. They will be part of the regular coverage. That's why I suggest most viewers probably won't notice a difference. But it's when you're getting in into the sort of the longer hours and the option of having multiple streams and on-demand playbacks and so on, that possibly the best angle will be on Eurosport. But there will be digital coverage on RTE as well.
Yeah, the Discovery element with the Olympics is interesting because John Malone is a big investor in Discovery. John Malone owns Virgin Media in Ireland. He also owns Virgin Media owns TV3.
Yeah, I mean, this is where it gets kind of very complicated. But
if you join the dots, you know, potentially, perhaps for TV3 down the road, there might be some Olympic coverage coming its way.
Yeah, I mean, John Malone is a really interesting figure, and he's been a sort of a business partner of Rupert Murdoch's in the past, but they've also had a number of clashes. And sports rights is really one of the big fronts, and there is a bit of an Irish connection there because he has a stake in Discovery, and he is the biggest shareholder in Liberty Global, which is one of the sort of related company to Liberty Media, which is his company. And say, yeah, there is a sort of a kind of an indirect link between TV3 and Eurosport. And this is just one part of the sort of the forces, shall we say, that make it life difficult for public service broadcasters. The others being, of course, the big sort of almost, you could say, the heavyweights are Sky and BT, because they're going after, they've gone after and have paid quite a huge amount of money for the most premium football rights, which for the moment, you know, Discovery isn't in that market yet and possibly won't be, because it depends on Sky and BT for carriage deals in the UK, and Virgin Media and Liberty, that end of things, you know, they're not in that market yet either. But as I say, there's plenty, a lot of other premium sports rights that they have gone after and they will go after.
Do we know if TV3 were bidders for the sub-licensing of rights for the 2020 games?
I don't, for the Olympics, no. I think they may have looked at it, but I'm not sure if they actually went through with the bid.
Okay. All right.
But now we know that they're interested in GAA.
Well, exactly, I was coming on to that. GAA rights are going to be up for grabs after this year's championship is out of the way. Sky already on the pitch, of course. This is a jewel in the crown, if you like, for RTE. They've had these GAA rights from when God was a boy, and they won't want to give them up. It's very important in terms of their domestic audience. So how do you see that shaping up, and what are you hearing from the GAA in what they might be thinking? TV3 previously had the rights. Sky took their package of rights. RTE maintained theirs, and of course TG Carr and Satan to get some subsidiary rights as well.
I mean, it's clearly sort of differing opinions within the GAA about, you know, what they should do and what, you know, there is possibly more money available if they encourage a big bidding auction, but there will be a lot of RTE loyalists within GAA as well, recognise that RTE has this long tradition and also can deliver the highest audiences. To put, you know, that audience in perspective, I was actually just looking back at the performance of the Euro 2012 ratings, and the Republic of Ireland's match against Croatia, I'm sure was joyous for all concerned, was the highest rating of rated sports event that year with 1.2 million viewers, and the match against Spain was also second. But the All-Ireland GAA football final did come in ahead against the Italy match, you know, so it's up there. It's traditionally one of the
Consistent. I mean, it's
audiences.
A similar number each year, isn't it?
Absolutely. The GAA delivers for RTE, and RTE needs GAA, I would suggest, and I think it would be a disaster.
Does GAA need RTE?
I think it possibly does, but you know,
I mean, it's not just TV, it's radio as well, it's online, GAA Go, all that kind of stuff.
There's a business partnership there on GAA Go, which is the international platform for watching GAA matches. That said, TV3 through Virgin Media are, you know, they're richer than they ever were, and at their position, I believe, is that they don't want to just to sort of dabble in GAA. If they're going after some rights, they want to go after a significant, you know, package of rights. Not, you know, that's the only way of driving advertising, is to sell a particular, you know, substantial package. And throw that, you know, the possibility that Sky will go in again. And we also have Setanta, now owned by Air, as a possible bidder, as a likely bidder. And that's for,
and of course, Air is a sponsor of the GAA football championships.
They would love to get their hands on some GAA as well. So that looks like,
well, they have league coverage at the minute. They don't have championship.
Yeah,
live championship
coverage. Yeah, I suppose. I mean, the big championship. But there's going to be a pretty fierce battle there. So that's happy days, I think, if you're in the J.
And I suppose, Laura, if we're to look 5 or 10 years down the road, we've seen over the past decade or more even how the BBC's rights have slowly but surely been whittled away, mostly by Sky, but also by Channel 4 and others as well. Is RTE facing the same fate?
I think they're facing a very similar fate. Yes, I do. And they will likely go down the partnership route, I feel, where, you know, we've seen the BBC and ITV go in on Six Nations, and I'm sure we'll see RTE and TV3 go in together on certain joint bids. Because these things are so expensive, it's almost the only way to do it, I would imagine.
Okay, Laura Slattery, thank you for joining us. We'll take a short break now and we'll return with the Irish Fiscal Advisory Council's latest assessment of the Irish economy.
At Irish Life, we can tell you that 49% of employees in Ireland don't think about tomorrow. They don't have a pension plan. We can help you help them. Because if you're involved in running your company's pension plan, we can administer it for you. With our member-specific investment solutions, online access for employers, trustees and members, and always-on smartphone apps. Just call one of our corporate team on 01704 1845. Visit irishlifecorporatebusiness.ie or contact your pension consultant to find out how we can help your company think of tomorrow. We know Irish Life. We are Irish Life. Irish Life Assurance PLC is regulated by the Central Bank of Ireland. All information sourced for Irish Life September 2014.
Now, welcome back. As I mentioned at the beginning of the show, the Irish Fiscal Advisory Council's latest assessment is that the government needs to spend an extra, or find an extra 6 billion euro just to maintain the current level of public services over the next 5 years. It's a rather bleak assessment, and joining me in studio to discuss this and some other issues around the Irish economy are Cliff Taylor, editor of the business section in the Irish Times, and Arthur Beasley, the economics editor with this newspaper. Cliff, we might start with you. Tell us a little bit about this extra 6 billion euro just to maintain public services over the next 5 years. It's a stark figure.
It is. It's a bit of a reality check, I suppose, for the government. We saw the programme for government negotiated in lengthy talks with the independents and Fianna Fáil, and a whole range of commitments made about new spending, right, left and centre, and various projects.
We never got the cost of bill, did we?
We never did, and this indeed is one of the points that the Fiscal Advisory Council makes, that, look, the government hasn't sat down and put on a list, what is it going to spend, where is it going to cut taxes, and on the other side of the ledger, how is it going to pay for all this? So that, I think, was a central part of what they said in what they published yesterday. What the 6 billion really is that they're looking out over the next 5 years and saying, okay, there's going to be public pay increases, okay, there are going to be adjustments needed for inflation, that Ireland has an ageing population. And when you take all these things into account, it's likely to eat up a lot of the room for manoeuvre that the government is going to have, assuming it were to stay in place.
And Michael
Noonan,
I think, pre the election had said that we had potentially 12 billion in new budgetary commitments that could be achieved over the lifetime, the five-year lifetime of the
government.
Yeah,
so that's half of it eaten up, and I suppose also that assumes that everything remains fair and that economic growth remains strong. And in the briefing notes that Minister Noonan's civil servants have given to him, there are many which have been published today.
Caveats,
on the
department's
website, many caveats about the dangers in the world economy, the dangers of Brexit. Of course, civil servants are always cautious, they're always paid to be cautious. You'd expect that's what they say to their minister, but at the same time, they probably have a point. But the underlying message is that a lot of the room for manoeuvre that the government has is going to be eaten up by automatic increases. And we've already seen that today with reports that the government has signed up to big increases in health spending this year to deal with an overrun, increase in spending on the justice budget to cover Garda overtime. So immediately we see money being used up here. And all in the context of a period when Ireland is under control, I suppose, or has to stay within very strict EU budget rules which limit the additional amount we can spend each year, and rules which oblige us to reduce the deficit, the amount we borrow, at a specific reasonably fast pace each year. So it's it's going to be tough enough, I think.
Arthur, you've covered the Fiscal Advisory Council's assessments in the past, and they have tended to throw a large bucket of water over kind of projections about the health of the Irish economy. Should we be concerned about their latest assessment, or should we take it with a pinch of salt?
Well, I mean, that's what the Fiscal Council is there for. And this is a statutory body with a specific remit to look in a very detailed and considered way at all.
Yes, it's a
creature of the crash, essentially. And the objective is to inform public debate and political debate to ensure that the mistakes which led us over the edge so dramatically and so catastrophically all those years ago are not made again. Now, the Fiscal Council is, in its nature, necessarily a very, very cautious institution. So at a time when the government was easing off, when the previous government was easing off on austerity and easing off at the level at which taxes were being increased and expenditure was being cut, it was saying that the government should continue to do so, something which many in political circles would have viewed to be a political impossibility. But I do think there's an very important function here, and I think the criticisms are well made and seem to me to be grounded in economic common sense. Anyone who read the programme for government would have to conclude that the person with the calculator didn't seem to be in attendance at the meeting. There's a whole pile of promises there, no costings, and really, you know, these are aspirational, and these must be measured against the very specific pledge made by the incoming government that it was going to abide to the letter of these European and domestic fiscal rules. These rules are enshrined in domestic law. We had a referendum. So it is going to be difficult for the government, and everything it promises to do must be viewed through the prism of this pledge to abide by the rules, because it's that pledge which people in the outside world, people in the money markets, people in credit rating agencies, it's that pledge to which they look for a sign of the government's fiscal bona fides.
Yeah. Cliff, I note that the Fiscal Advisory Council said that the government's capital spending plans, which involve an additional $4 billion a year out to 2021, are extremely modest by historical and international levels. What should we make of that?
Well, I suppose what we should make of it is the standard economic advice to the government would be, look, you've cut back really heavily on capital spending, on investment spending during the crisis. You know, it was, I suppose, the easier political route to take than cutting back on day-to-day spending. But that with the economy growing again, we now urgently need to spend more in this area, everything from broadband to roads to a new runway for the
public
airport,
transport.
Public transport. All these areas need need investment, and they need heavy levels of investment, particularly in an economy that's growing at the rate that the Irish economy is growing at. But the problem is, such as our current spending commitments and the tax promises made by the government, that as the council said, it's just not clear where the money is going to come from to spend more on these capital projects. And even the government in its own plans has had to be necessarily modest in this area. Pretty much every economist would say, or most economists would say, look, you need to rebalance here. You need to spend more in this area because this is what's going to create jobs and protect the economy for the future and protect it from the kind of overheating, which was one of the problems that we faced when we headed into the crash.
Yeah. Arthur, there is a school of thought. I mean, some people wonder why we just don't generate more debt. It's practically, we're paying little or nothing for our debt on capital markets at the minute. Why not just borrow more money and plough it into infrastructure, which will yield a return in Ireland for years to come? It's not as simple as that, but just explain to us why.
Well, I mean, two things. The total volume of Ireland's national debt is in excess of 200 billion euro at this point. Sure, the debt ratio, that's the ratio of the total debt vis-a-vis the size of the economy, has come way down, but we haven't started to pay back the debt that was that is the legacy of the crash. And while the debt ratios look pretty favourable and are on an improving trend, were there to be any economic reversal, it's very, very clear that those ratios would go into pretty dramatic and precipitous reverse, and the country would then find itself with great difficulty on debt markets trying to raise new debt. So after a debt crisis of this magnitude, economic common sense would suggest that the thing to start doing is to start paying down debt as opposed to taking out yet more debt. And it's important to point out at this point that the Irish state is still borrowing for day-to-day purposes. Now, the deficit is below the 3% European limit, if you like. That marks an achievement, but we have yet to reach a point in which we're even paying back the debts which were taken on. And, you know, that money still has to be repaid, and that is the burden on the shoulders of every Irish.
And, of course, question marks over whether Irish Water is on or off balance sheet and all of that.
Of course, yeah. The money still has to be repaid, no matter whether it is on balance sheet or off it. And even if it was off balance sheet, I mean, the scale of money involved in the Irish Water case is really quite small when compared with the 200 billion in excess of which is on the balance sheet. Yeah.
Cliff, one of the interesting points that they've raised is around corporation tax receipts. We got a big jump last year, and the council's chairman John McHale has cautioned that much of this revenue was unexplained, and it come from a small number of big corporations, and it could disappear very quickly.
Yeah, and the briefing notes again presented to the minister by his civil servants, which, as I said, were published today, are very cautious on this point. They attribute the kind of reassurance about 2015 to the revenue commissioners, who they say assured them that this was kind of stable revenue would be recurring. Don't say very much about 2016. Again, corporation taxes have been running ahead, and I think the fiscal council is probably right. There's a lot of big moving parts in international corporate taxation. There are patents being moved around by big companies, which are changing the flow of taxation. There's write-offs. I think it would be very dangerous to rely on this, certainly on this rate of growth continuing. The department does make the point that all they're expecting this year is that the actual current level of corporation tax seen last year will be repeated this year. That does seem reasonable. But we certainly can't bank on this going forward, because goodness knows what changes are going to come.
Does it suggest that some of these corporations are actually paying the 12.5% rate of tax that they're supposed to pay, as opposed to only paying a fraction of that, which we discovered a couple of years ago? Or is that wishful thinking?
I think that's probably wishful thinking, Ciarán, to be honest with you. I think what it suggests is that some of them have come to the conclusion that they're going to end up paying a bit more tax somewhere. It may suggest that they have started to pull back on some of the really aggressive tax avoidance mechanisms which involved tax havens such as Bermuda and the Cayman Islands, that they may realise that parking money in these offshore havens is a bit more difficult than it was before, that avoiding tax completely is a bit more difficult than it was before. But I think the number of the really big companies paying 12.5%, I'd be surprised if there was very, very many of them doing that.
Arthur, you've covered the Apple case, which is ongoing with the European Commission. It was suggested in the run-up to the general election by Ruth Coppinger and her colleagues at the AAA PBP that Apple owes us €19 billion in back tax for all its activities in Ireland over the years. And if they simply paid us that money, we could pay for the divil and all in terms of public services. Do you buy that argument?
No. The €19 billion stems from a report carried out by JP Morgan, which is investment banker to Apple, which took a deep dive, if you like, into this question 1 year ago. JP Morgan, in arriving at this quite rudimentary calculation, emphasized that these were very, very rough estimates. And the point it was making, that even in a scenario in which Apple was forced to pay €19 billion to the Irish Exchequer, which I don't think anyone really seriously thinks is in play, the point that JP Morgan were making in that context was that this would be but a blip, if you like, in as compared with the very vast cash mountain which Apple holds. So I don't think we're talking multiple billions of that order, but there still is a very tricky issue, because we don't know where the Commission is going to come down at the end of the day in this particular case. There's been a huge political pushback as between Washington, the authorities in the US, and Brussels, and yet the commissioner is saying, there is no question of undue attention or improper attention being placed on American companies in this setting. And then we have the Irish government, if you like, in the middle, insistent all the time that no special arrangements were made for Apple or for any other country, and making the case that any such arrangements would have been illegal in Irish law, and that these are not the type of things that any tax authority should be doing. And that's very much the line from the Revenue Commissioners as well.
Cliff Taylor, just sum up for us what kind of headroom Michael Noonan's likely to have in the budget, and what all of the pressures that you mentioned earlier that are coming through, what's it going to mean in terms of budget arithmetic, and how's he going to balance the books effectively?
Well, I think you're looking at a budget that's going to be a bit less, a good deal less generous than the budget for this year, which was announced last October. The figures, as now presented, suggest he'll have about around 900 million to add to spending and taxes.
And yet, sorry to cut across you, but and yet we've seen, as you mentioned earlier, the Department of Health getting an additional 500 million euro and Garda overtime an extra 40.
We're as yet a little unclear how that's going to fit into the arithmetic. Obviously, tax has been running well ahead of target this year, and it may be that the government believes that it can afford that within the sums for this year. But I think you're going to see a reasonably modest budget, in October, despite the fact that the public finances are in good health. And I think the minister is going to struggle to meet, the two ministers are going to struggle to meet the kind of the sense in the programme for government that there was going to be money spent right, left, and centre.
And what about tax cuts?
Limited. I think it's already clear from the programme for government that the emphasis is going to be on spending. That was seen to be one of the messages coming from the electorate. I think Fine Gael will still want to put some tax cuts in. I think we'll still see some cut if it can be afforded in the USC. But I think the promise of abolishing the USC is now going to be pushed out. It'll probably be maintained in theory, if you like. But the idea that it could be done over the period of one government or over the next few years is going to be quietly forgotten, and it will be put as an aspiration for the long-term future. Because remember, there's going to be public sector pay increases pressure likely to have to be factored in here as well.
I think the USC might well be eliminated by the time of the 110th or 120th anniversary of the 1916 Rising. To go back to the revenue question, the point is made by the Fiscal Council in its report that it's only if additional revenue comes in that the government might well be in a position to comply with the pledge it has made to meet the fiscal rules. And here we have a scenario in which the government, for perfectly understandable political reasons, there is a cash shortage in the health service. There is a requirement for Garda overtime. We've a spate of killings in north central Dublin for many months now. But it seems that those additional tax revenues are already being spent by the government. And it was the very granting of a supplementary estimate in the run-up to the budget last year that led to a previous round of criticism from Professor John McHale and the Fiscal Advisory Council.
And perhaps interesting that this one was announced the day after the Fiscal Advisory Council had its press conference rather than the day before.
Right, okay. All right, that's it for this week from the Irish Times Business Podcast. Declan Conlon produced the show with JJ Vernon as sound engineer. Don't forget to get the latest business news straight into your inbox by signing up to our Business Today email at irishtimes.com. You can also follow the Irish Times business feed on Twitter and Facebook. My thanks to Laura Slattery, Cliff Taylor and Arthur Beasley for their contributions. I'm off to the Euros next week, so this will be the last time that I will have Arthur as a guest on this business podcast. Many of you will have heard that Arthur is leaving the Irish Times after 18 years of sterling service, and he's heading for a big new adventure with the Financial Times in Brussels. I'd like to wish Arthur every success in his new role. He's been both a host and a guest on this podcast, although not at the same time. And I'll leave you this week with this short vignette of his contribution to the show. Until next time, take care.
Good day and welcome to the Irish Times Business Podcast. I'm Arthur Beasley. There's nothing to see here. Please go away. We're not talking the sport today, but we are talking the business of the sport. And with me here in studio is Laura Slattery, John McManus, Dominic Coyle, Owen Burke-Kennedy, Kira O'Brien, Mark Paul, Pamela Newingham, Barry O'Halloran, and also with us is Kieran Hancock. Thank you very much indeed, Kieran. It's always good to be engaged in novel developments on this podcast. So, Kieran, what's going on today? No one in the Revenue Commissioners is going to get thrown under a bus for these returns.
I even met one guy who had lost all his money on the stock market and was becoming a monk.
It's a hell of a way to have a conversion.
Do you have certain items of food? Like, are you low on butter, you can just go on your phone and see the camera in your fridge.
Gosh, no, I can tell you with three kids at home, I can tell you it'd be news in my house if we weren't running short of milk. Ciarán's going to go back now to the banking inquiry, and we'll see him maybe in a few months. And Jim is going to go off and place a bet on whether Britain stays or leaves the EU. He's Ciarán Hancock.
That's Arthur Beasley.
This has been the Irish Times Business Podcast. Thank you for listening.